From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzek Berlot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Rebecca Cruz and I discuss efforts to control the proliferation of nuclear weapons during and after the Cold War, as the world marks 70 years since the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
There has been kind of this process of arms buildup and then arms treaties and then buildup and then kind of drawdown.
Then I'll talk with Vasilis Loulis, who uses documentary film to show how hope persists through the past's darkest times.
In the turbulence of history, you can find people who apart from their suffer, they keep alive the flame of hope.
Later this half hour, stories of hope through Greek film. The news is next. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat. Rebecca Cruz, a couple of interesting topics this week, but let's start with the 70th anniversary of Hiroshima, the dropping of the atomic weapons 70 years ago to end the Second World War. 200,000 people died in Japan after the dropping of these bombs. Of course, the United States has been somewhat contrite. I mean, this is the only example of the use of nuclear weapons in the history of nuclear weapons. But this reminds us of how we then embarked on a long campaign, primarily the United States and the Soviet Union, to engage in discussions about arms control and limiting access to nuclear weapons and nuclear material. But the irony is that we ended up with a whole bunch of it. So this anniversary this week, 70 years later, is a reminder of all kinds of things regarding weapons of mass destruction and other dangerous things around the world.
Yeah, it really is. And I think those images of the bombs that you can see those or other images of bombs going off, they still resonate with us. They still are able to elicit that real sense of fear. And of course, the bombs that we dropped were very powerful, but certainly not nearly as powerful as the bombs that exist today. And there has been kind of this process of arms buildup and then arms treaties and then buildup and then kind of drawdown. So you mentioned that this kind of started this off in the 1960s and going into effect in 1970 in particular was the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which really kind of got things going. But interestingly enough, we have countries today that are trying to get nuclear weapons. Korea did not sign this. Israel did not sign this. Some other countries did not sign this. But we continue to go back to that. And of course, in the height of the Cold War, the number of nuclear weapons that were available and in the arsenals, again, particularly the United States and the Soviet Union, were incredibly high. There are still nuclear weapons in both countries' hands, but significantly fewer than there were at that time. So some progress has been made. But on the other hand, it still is a very lasting concern and certainly worth noting and thinking about the ramifications if something like this were to happen again.
Well, I think we can't help but have a discussion, it seems to me. I mean, you mentioned North Korea, you mentioned Israel. I mean, we're going to talk about Iran here in a second. But I mean, we have these concerns, obviously, about weapons of mass destruction, about nuclear weapons in particular. I mean, these are, and as you alluded to, very, very mass destructive weapons, nothing like what happened in Nagasaki and Hiroshima all those years ago. But is it really the weapon itself, or is it who owns it, who possesses it, who might use it? Because obviously we don't trust the North Koreans. We're concerned about them. We don't want them to have nuclear weapons. Again, we're going to talk about Iran in a second, but we don't want them to have. But Israel, I mean, nobody's breathing down Israel's neck to get rid of their nuclear weapons, or certainly our other allies, France, the UK, you know, even China to some degree. I mean, so you've got those legit, I guess, air quotes there, legitimate nuclear weapon states, and we don't seem to have as many concerns about them, but we do about these occasional players. I mean, what does that mean for us in terms of the future of arms control, or, you know, trying to prevent the spread of weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons in particular?
Well, it matters who you're asking. If you're asking the United States, yes, it very much matters who has these weapons. Even though the United States was in a Cold War with the Soviet Union for some time, we now at least are communicating with them. China, it's a little bit more up in the air, but we don't have a lot of control over what they do. We can work on these treaties. We can get together with them. We can hope that the international community can pressure those countries enough to not use these weapons. And there haven't been a lot of indications in the last 20 years that they're going to. But what we don't know are the countries that you mentioned, a North Korea, an Iran. We don't know a lot about that leadership. We don't know when they would use them, if they would use them. And it's just that lack of confidence that they would abide by kind of the international community's code or by these agreements that concerns us.
But isn't it really a concern that nuclear weapons are still today, 70 years later, all these years later, still the currency of power in the international community? I mean, there's a reason why countries like North Korea and Iran want to obtain a nuclear weapon. Okay, so that opens the door to discussing Iran. We do have now this nuclear agreement, this nuclear deal with Iran to eliminate sanctions on Iran in exchange for safeguards and their reduction in their nuclear activities. But, I mean, what this did, of course, was it put Iran on the world stage as an important country. North Korea, of course, got way more attention than it ever would have gotten otherwise, you know, because it has nuclear weapons. Countries like Pakistan and India and, you know, these are few examples. We don't have a lot of countries outside the typical, the legitimate, again, weapons of mass destruction holders, nuclear weapon powers. But it's still, they won't get rid of them. You know, the United States isn't going to get rid of them. France, UK, you know, they're not getting rid of their nuclear weapons. So they remain the currency of power in the international system. And therefore, how does this give any kind of legitimacy to, you know, the notion of trying to limit or prevent the spread and proliferation of these weapons?
Well, that is obviously the issue. North Korea has been able to get a number of deals out of us. They have had issues feeding their population, and there have been instances where we have asked them to draw back their nuclear program in exchange for food, those sorts of things. So, yes, it is a currency, and I don't know that we are going to be able to let those countries know. But the fact that we have been able to come together, put together a deal with Iran, even though there's a great deal of opposition in this country, particularly in the Congress, there is a lot of support. There's a lot of international support, and that surely means something. The sanctions that were put on Iran were incredibly difficult and tough, and they have been celebrating the release of those sanctions in return for drawing down their nuclear weapons. So perhaps there is something, but we're going to continue to come back to this time and time again.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Rebecca, for being here and sharing your insight as always.
Thank you.
If you would like to learn more about the nuclear deal with Iran, you can watch President Obama's Wednesday speech about the agreement at kgou.org. If you have any questions about our discussion today, you can also find us on Twitter at WorldviewsKGOU. While you're on our website, you'll find all of our past episodes and interviews and a link to subscribe to our weekly podcast. It's also available on iTunes. After a short break, I'm joined by documentary filmmaker Vasilis Loulis. His film, Kisses to the Children, tells the story of five Greek Jewish Holocaust survivors. I'm Suzette Rolat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Rolat. Nearly 20 years ago, documentary filmmaker Vasilis Loulis visited the Jewish Museum in Athens, where he was moved by seeing objects from Greek Jewish children hidden during the Holocaust. He started looking for new documents and visiting survivors to tell a story of childhood, rather than another film about the tragedy during the Second World War. He also became a father during the filmmaking process and was deeply affected by the idea of a child growing up in silence, with a fake name and hiding their identity. Vasilis Loulis, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you very much.
Well, Vasilis, as a filmmaker, documentary filmmaker, fiction writer, and director as well, you've got a long history of making film. But I think one of the interesting things that has been said about your work is that you tend to focus on people's little stories and the turbulence of history. Can you start there by telling us what you mean by that? Why focus on turbulent history and then people's little stories? What do you mean by that?
I love making films about people in turbulent history because, you know, in this situation, you can see everything in human of the human being. Everything a character has in his or her soul is coming up into these circumstances. When you live a peaceful life, everything goes well. But everything is ready to turn upside down when you are obliged to face history or the obstacles of the history. From the other hand, I don't like to deal with the people who make the history. I mean, the politicians or the generals, even though there are some details so in their lives that are worth to deal with. I prefer instead of it to focus on the everyday, the ordinary people, to their simple and everyday stories, because they are the persons who must face their fate.
So they're the ones who have to endure the decisions that are made by those who, as you said, make history. You're focusing on the ones who experience history. Perhaps mm-hmm. would you consider them to be the victims of history and that they're having to live in this turbulent world in these changing times? I mean, are you focusing on the victimized nature of the ordinary citizen or just the kind of the resiliency of the ordinary citizen? Or are both of these things coming out? As you said, kind of everything kind of comes, the soul is shown, mm-hmm. you know, during these times of troubles.
You said the magic word resilience. This is exactly what I'm trying to see in my films through the personal confessions of the people. You know, I think that in the turbulence of history, you can find people who, apart from their suffer, from their pain, from their losses, they keep alive into their souls the flame of hope. And this is what I'm trying to bring up.
My guest is Vasilis Loulas, a documentary filmmaker from Greece who uses the medium to tell stories of hope. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. I'm Suzette Guralat, and you're listening to Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Guralat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. This half hour, I've been talking with Greek documentary filmmaker Vasilis Loulas. His 2012 documentary, Kisses to the Children, tells the stories of five Greek Jewish children who survived the Holocaust during World War II. You can watch the film's trailer on our website, kgou.org. We'll discuss the film in just a few minutes, but first, let's get back to our discussion of finding hope in moments of loss and tragedy. So the people you focus on are enduring their experiences, and from that emerges a sense of hope that
exactly.
people can overcome and be resilient and endure their mm-hmm. experiences. There's something, I guess, rather just human about that, right? In the sense that no matter where you go, no matter whose turbulent history you're talking about, that mm-hmm. humans find a way to endure their circumstances and overcome the decisions that are being made by those who you said who are making that history. Mm-hmm. That's also perhaps a message you're trying to send, is that this is something that binds all of us together.
Yes, yes, exactly. But I think the most interesting is the way you can do it in a film, because all we're talking about is or psychological. But how is it when you are trying to do it into a film? How is it when you are trying to make the people to talk about their experience? How is it to make them to go back to their experience and to feel it again?
So capturing that on film so that we can tap into that emotion, that experience,
that actual
sense of resilience.
Yes,
with them.
You know, somehow I feel more as a psychoanalyst than a director sometimes.
Helping them address
those issues that they've had to face.
Because
you must help them to go back to their experience and to clean the dirties that had been put in the medieval, in the time from then to our days. Because, as you know, when someone is asked, okay, tell me your story about your childhood, he or she is trying to tell you a constructed story, a story full of real emotions and moments, but also full of reconstructed thoughts, of wishes, of images from other people. So my work is that I try to clean the wall and leave the stones clear, even with holes. When you have a wall, an old wall, there are some parts of it well done, but there are some other parts with ruins. My work is to bring up the wall in its first situation, before the repair.
But let's talk about your current project. The film Kisses to the Children focuses on five Greek Jewish children who were saved by Christian families during the German occupation of Greece. I mean, obviously, when any of us think about children and the experience of young people during the Holocaust, we think of Anne Frank automatically. And that tends to be kind of our generalization of what, you know, young people experience during that time. But that isn't the case. There were many, many, many other children that had very different experiences. We don't know much about them. And we certainly don't know much about Greek children and what they experienced during this time. So tell us a little bit about that project and why you decided to focus on that particular turbulent experience and work with these young people who then grew up to live, you know, beyond the war.
Mm-hmm. You know, in my own film, there are five Jewish children, five Jewish Greek children. One of them, Rosina, is a kind of the Greek Jewish Anna Frank, because she was hidden for 1 year and a half into an apartment in Thessaloniki, North Greece, and she also kept a diary. So it's another one, Anna Frank's story, but with a happy end, because this girl, she has survived, as well as all of my five characters. They are among the few Greek Jews, Jewish children who saved, who didn't arrest it, who didn't feel the atrocities of the concentration and extermination camps in Poland and in Germany. They are children who had the good luck to be harbored by Greek Christians.
So is this perhaps part of the reason why we don't know much about them, is they actually survived?
Yes, because they are not victims with the common sense of the word. But from the other hand, for me, it was a very good opportunity to shed light to the childish psychology. How is it for a child to stay for 1 year and a half into an apartment, into a house, in silence, without even a walk, without screaming, without playing?
They weren't able to be children. They weren't able to have that normal life.
They are obliged to mature early and abruptly. It is very interesting in my film how these men and women, old men and women now, how they are talking about their bad and very difficult emotions and feelings they had as children, while at the same time they almost wish to be again a child. Even now,
because they missed that as young people.
They missed a lot of moments as a child, but they do like to go back. And this documentary gave them the opportunity to go back to their experience and to revive it. To feel again some of the emotions who had at that time, very strong and painful emotions, but at the same time there were some moments of relax, some moments of dreaming, some moments of feeling peacefully with the families who had them into their arms.
Well, Vasilis, thank you so much for being with us today on Worldviews to share with us your project, but also for the project, for sharing the stories of those people that that we don't normally get to hear from. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
You've been listening to my conversation with Vasilis Loulas, a filmmaker from Greece who directed the documentary Kisses to the Children about Greek survivors of the Holocaust. You can watch the trailer on our website, kgou.org. Worldviews is a collaborative partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Sam Dupre edited this interview, and Brian Hardzinski produced the show and wrote our digital content. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Corlott.